This is Street Sages, brief conversations with inspired life creators. This is Erin Schimmervine. I decided to start a podcast because, well, a couple of reasons. One was to combat my shyness. Number two was because I always have been interested in talking to unique people. And number three, I'm a weirdo magnet. Over time, I've discovered that there's often profoundly deep wisdom to be extracted from everyday encounters. It could be your handyman, delivery driver, a couple of kids selling lemonade, a muttering homeless guy, the person sitting next to you on the bus. It could even be a deranged relative. You never know when you're going to encounter an unknown sage. My first interview is with Claire Halford. I met her at the Omega Institute in upstate New York. I'm in a conversation with some people and I feel a tap on my back and I turn around and there's this sparkling bright woman with a huge smile saying, "Hello, I'm Claire." Well, oh, hi Claire, how are you? So Claire and I got to talking and one of the things that she had mentioned that she had just quit her job as an ER doctor to become a full-time artist and soul doctor. Soul doctor? That's amazing. I had to ask her more questions about that. So she revealed a very inspiring journey as how she walked away from a full-time job with a very fat paycheck to becoming a full-time artist. And in that conversation, Claire shared with us how she walked away from the fat paycheck and the certainty of a job such as an ER doctor to become a full-time artist. So I'd like to hear your journey as a radiant creator. You used to be an ER doctor and now you're an artist. So I'd love to hear how that process unfolded.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, firstly, thanks so much for talking to me and amazing to meet you guys as radiant creators as well. I've flown here all the way from New Zealand. We're in upstate New York at the moment. This is kind of a pilgrimage for me at the end of I'm kind of midway through a big transitional year. So, for sure, as you say, I used to be an ER doctor, and I have been a doctor for 20 years. And all that time, I've been a frustrated artist and writer, and finally, I just kind of had to get out of my 9-to-5. Well, not that it was 9-to-5, it was a lot longer, weirder hours than that, So I think that there's many doctors out there and other health professionals and lots of people actually in the helping professions who are very creative. And a lot of doctors seem to be artists and musicians and kind of have stuff they do on the side, But it's never really talked about at work. And for me, the medicine was always an art. So it wasn't that I was an unfulfilled creator. In a way, I created a lot of beauty in my job, my connection with people, and you can be very creative in whatever you do. You don't have to be doing the archetypal like art or whatever you do. You can be an immense, I call myself a creatrix, and when whatever you do, whether you're making a bowl of porridge or you're working as a plumber or whatever, you can be immensely creative. So we're all creative. I hate this whole thing of, I can't draw,
Oh, yeah. I'm not an artist. I can't draw anything.
Oh, it's so weird. We're all artists of our own lives. And let's face it, our whole life is like a creative art project.
Mm-hmm.
So as a very small child, I was into doing three things. And one of them was helping people and animals get better. And in fact, it's a bit pathological. I used to hang around with bandages hoping people would hurt themselves. There was one time we were on holiday and I must have been about six or something, and I dug all these holes in the beach and covered them up and hoped that people would fall down them and hurt themselves so I could run and help.
I like you.
Oh my god, my mom was like, "What are you doing waiting behind the sand dune?" Nothing. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Maybe I shouldn't have told you that.
Oh no, it's good. It's good. I like it.
And so the other thing that I loved doing was drawing. And one of my first memories is holding a little crayon in my fist, and I was just obsessed with drawing the world around me and drawing my imaginal world, which was huge. I used to see ghosts, and I remember seeing fairies as a small child. And so this imaginal world, or wherever it was, I actually don't think it was imaginal, it was very real. I used to depict it in all my pictures, and I used to make sculptures, and Also, I was a storyteller, so I've always written stories. And again, around that same age as I was digging, you know, man traps on the beach, I was also making up songs. And my mum had to come in and tell me to shut up every night because I would just be lying in bed, you know, freeloading songs out. Mm-hmm. When you're in a society that has a very rigid view of, you know, what your life destiny can be, you're only presented with so many choices. So I was always told that if I was an artist, I would never make any money. I would never make any money from being creative. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
It's so bizarre, you know, and contrary
to the truth. That's the reason I didn't do it either.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I get it.
You do the safe option, right? Mm-hmm. And so my mom and dad, you know, bless them, they absolutely did their best. And they said, you know, you've got to have a trade. And that translated into becoming a doctor. I was good at science and I wanted to be a healer. And, you know, I went to my interview at medical school and these two pork-faced men, you know, spilling out of their waistcoats, were sitting there giving me the interview, and they're like, well, why do you want to be a doctor? And I was like, I want to help people, like, because I really meant it, you know. And they just about fell off their chairs. They were like, ho, ho, you know, you'll learn, Missy, kind of thing. But I never let go of that immense drive to help people, and it really almost killed me. Mm-hmm. You know, for anyone listening who is a doctor or who is married to a doctor, which would be even worse than being a doctor, I imagine, you know, you'll know that it demands a huge personal sacrifice, and it really conditions you by shock tactics through your training. And I imagine many very creative people have it literally knocked out of them during medical school. But I found my professional practice really fulfilling and all the rest of it in some ways, in the ways that of interacting with my clients and especially the nurses and, you know what, especially clerical staff and the orderlies and all of those amazing people that do the real work. But living within that patriarchal system and within the conventional medical system, which does a lot of good, it really does. People diss it, you know, especially in the alternative community, feeling that, you know, all of medicine is bad, you know. But I worked in emergency medicine because I felt like it was the most ethical arm of medicine, that, you know, if someone comes in with a broken leg, well, you can't really just wave a crystal over it right then. You know, you have to pull it straight and put a rod in it, you know what I mean? So I could avoid most of the sticky stuff of medicine, like drugs and drug companies and all of the treatments that I didn't believe in. Concurrently to that, though, I was busy working on what really interests me, which is energetic healing and my art. So I trained as a Qigong teacher. I've been doing Qigong quite intensively for about 9 years now. And for anyone who doesn't know what Qigong is, it's a little bit like Tai Chi. I used to describe it as yoga on acid, but it's not quite that. It's all about Qi, just means, as well as Qi, you know, life force, and Gong is work. So it's working on your Qi and then being able to use Qi to help heal and replenish other people. So that's very creative. It involves another creative visualization. And so it suited me, and I imagine anyone who is an artist or is really into visualization, Qigong would suit them very well. So I found my modality, you know. And at the same time, I started writing medical detective novels.
Wow.
I know. I had a dream about them, actually. And so I did some novels about a girl called Harry Denham, who was a junior doctor who was also a psychic and had to operate within the mainstream system and solve crimes and all that kind of thing. Anyway, I spent years writing these books, and I've got an agent now who has an office in New York and an office in Auckland, and we haven't sold the book yet. So I'm still writing, but that gave me a lot of confidence and courage that someone would acknowledge this self-taught, I'm completely self-taught, writer, that I was a good writer and that my stuff was worth looking at. So that was a great start. So lots of things, just like a domino kind of effect of how and why I could leave my job, came into play. So the next thing I did was, I've just done a lot of personal work on myself and looking at my direction, and we just came to this seminar by Neil Cramer, and, you know, if anyone who hasn't listened to him, he's a total dude, you know. He's really no nonsense. he's my age and he's from England, you know. Mm-hmm. He knows the same kids' TV shows that I do, you know. The guy's got cred. And I actually flew to Oregon to see him to plan how the hell I was going to get out of the fix I'd got myself into, which was being totally reliant on my income as a doctor and mm-hmm. whilst feeling quite unfulfilled and increasingly unhappy. So the crunch time really came at the beginning of this year. I just reached a point where I couldn't go to work anymore. I just couldn't make myself do it. Mm-hmm. My friends and colleagues were very polite about it, but they kind of thought that I'd gone crazy. And I mean, I don't know, what is crazy? Like, maybe crazy is becoming
insane. It's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
My family doctor was immensely supportive, and he signed me off for stress for 3 months. And I was able to have just a bit of time out, really doing nothing. And at the end of that time, I went to Peru and did ayahuasca. Which, oh my God. I mean, I'd never even taken a Tylenol, hardly, you know.
Yeah, it's so crazy that you would just go off and do that. And isn't that, as you were telling me last night, isn't that when you saw what you would be doing next?
Yes, it's exactly when I saw it. So ayahuasca is the most damn crazy drug you can ever imagine. And it sinks into pre-verbal memory, and it also looks at, you know, what you're going to be doing. I mean, it depends for each person, of course. But I was shown, wow. Okay, so I was shown that all my work that I'd done so far was preparation for what I was really going to do. And it showed me with a torch. So it showed me with a torch wandering through the darkness, and it showed people being attracted to that light, and it said, I encountered like a friendly or completely loving divine being during my ayahuasca trip. It was just the most incredible thing. I realized truly then that I was not alone, having wanted to believe that for many years, but kind of not believing it.
Did you know who that being might be?
No, I didn't see. I mean, I saw actually lots of guides or whatever you want to call it. I did see lots of entities, but I didn't see the one that was guiding me. Yeah.
It was your higher self. I always wonder about things like that.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And my God, did it ever love me.
Mm-hmm.
And the most beautiful thing about it was, A, that I realized I was a really good person. And I was so eager to learn. I was like, it was showing me lots of things. I'd be like, no. Back to the point. You know, I'm here to learn. We haven't got much time. So it said, well, you know, what is it that you feel good doing? And I was like, well, writing, drawing, and helping people get better. Okay. I was like, well, let's combine those. Yeah, so it said, okay, we'll just combine those then and move towards what gives you good feeling. So then it showed me making art and writing and putting them together in books as prescriptions, soul medicine, as it put it, and being read by people who were, it showed them as like people with slings on and, you know, like injured people, like archetypal sort of, you know, bandaged up people. But it really meant soul injured people, or I don't know if I believe in the term soul injured, but people who were carrying wounds of some sort. Mm-hmm. And they were reading my stuff, and it was delivering my intention, my love, my prescription for their healing through it. And it said, you know, just do that. And it showed people all over the world reading them. And it said, don't worry about the money. The money's going to come. You just got to do it. And it's just going to give you immense joy. And it showed me talking on stage to lots of people about life generally.
I could see that.
Mm. I love speaking, you know.
I can tell. I love it. You're very good.
Oh, thanks. I've never been able to get me to shut up as a kid, you know. So I could do that professionally. That'd be really good.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you just got to start somewhere, you know. So I came out of that just so uplifted, buoyant. I was trashed as well. I was so done over by this drug. You know, it makes you puke and shit and makes you feel terrible. But I came out of it with this deep resolution, strength in my heart that I knew that there was something really big waiting for me to do. So I did I made a list of, you know, you have to make yourself some sort of plan. You have to start planning in whatever way that is as you're planning your escape, you know. So it might be like a really small thing. You know, when I divorced my husband, we're great friends now. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me telling you this, but I knew that the day I left, I was going to go buy a goldfish tank, right, and fill it with goldfish. I have no idea why, but it was my tangible goal. That's what I'm going to do. and then everything's going to be okay. So I made that plan, and the day I left him, I went and got a goldfish tank, etc. So it really helps to have some sort of hook that you imagine that you can just pull, you know, gravitate the set of situational circumstances towards you, grab them all into alignment, and manifest what you want. So I started to make a list. Okay, what can I do to manifest this? Well, number one, I've got to leave my job. So that's a really scary thing to do when you're on a really good salary, you fly business, you know, you've generated a life that requires a lot of income. So it's very hard to get out of that, frankly. Mm-hmm. It's very, very scary. And I still really don't have any answers for how you can make that financial bridge without just taking a risk. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a little tiny bit of money squirreled away. I got married again after 7 years on my own last year. And my husband's in a startup business too. He's a tantric specialist and an intimacy coach. So he's starting to build his business, but, you know, we haven't got big cash coming in from that yet. It was a real leap of faith that I made.
It's a bit scary. Mm.
Yeah, it was incredibly scary. Mm-hmm. But not doing it was more scary, frankly.
Yeah.
So the second thing on my list was, right, get familiar with a Wacom tablet, right? I hardly knew what this thing was, you know. Oh. So my ex-husband, again, actually, who's turned out to be so helpful, such a nice guy. He's a cartoonist. He's a professional artist. And he advised me what to get, and he helped me set the bloody thing up. And in fact, he's like my 0800 helpline. I can call him up and ask him any questions, because I couldn't switch the thing on to begin with. You know, I'm a total computer ignoramus. So that was number two. Number three was create a 4-frame cartoon and put it every day. Do it every day. Consistency is the key. Mm-hmm. And make it it's an inspirational poem, and make it so that you have a little tiny poem within the... you know, within the 4-frame cartoon. And it's got to be all about being a cheerleader, basically, for other people. Yeah, which I know that's something you're really into, too. Mm-hmm. I love that. The cosmic cheerleader.
Cosmic cheerleader.
I love that you're a cosmic cheerleader. Oh, my God. I've got a cartoon about being a cheerleader, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you're going to star in one, I tell you.
I love
it. Yeah. So that's what I did. And I came up with... And I, because I'm so into cats, like I am a consummate cat woman, you know, it's terrible. I have so many, don't ask my husband how many cats we have. It's terrible. He wants to get rid of some because they're wild.
But not happening.
I don't know. But I have one particular favorite cat who's a Burmese cat called Belle. She's been my friend for the last 8 years, and she is an enlightened being. She's amazing. So Belle, you know, telepathically transmits her ideas to me every day. That's how I like to see it. And then I draw a cartoon about me and Belle and our lives, really, and our observations of life. So that's what I started doing. Just started in April, and I had no idea where to show it, how to show it, you know. My agent for my writing had encouraged me to do the whole Facebook thing. I had been previously quite, you know, about Facebook.
I don't blame you.
No. But I think when used as a tool, it's good. And it connects people, and absolutely. I've had so many good things come through it. So I just started off really small. My page is called Clarabelle, and I just have a lot of content going on it regularly. And I'm starting to build an audience, and just the most gorgeous people contact me. I have this one lady called Aileen, who's just moved from Tasmania, Australia, and she messaged me every day just to encourage me to keep going.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. So having people backing you and creating an audience, it's all about that, for sure, to you know, really give you a boost on those days where you think, what the hell am I doing? You know, holy shit. And I've definitely had a lot of those days of feeling like I have gone crazy, and what am I doing, giving up my income and all the rest of it. But, you know, one thing I have learned during this job is that we're all going to die. We really are. Like, it's really real. And I've seen people die in all sorts of horrible situations. And I've seen people, you know, as they're dying, I've sat with people as they've died. And the one universal thing is, you know, I wish I'd done more. I wish I'd lived my life how I truly wanted to live it. I wish I hadn't not done this. I wish I hadn't been too scared to do this. And it was a huge teaching for me. And one of the things that propelled me out of doing something that wasn't quite in alignment with what I really knew I should be doing. So I have to come back to that. when I'm 100, will I look back and say, God, I wish I hadn't left medicine and embarked on this amazing adventure? I absolutely will not be saying that. Hopefully I will be looking back. Well, I know I will be looking back on a colorful and interesting and wild and expansive and beautiful life in which I've had the chance to touch so many more people already than the total number of, you know, thousands of patients I've had stuff to do with. And believe me, I've really given of my heart to each one of them. But to share with your audience, to share your art with your audience is a very noble deed indeed. And it's a spiritual pursuit, and not to be taken lightly. It's not just art. It's a deep sharing of your very roots, of your essence, of yourself. It's an intimate thing. It's a risky thing. And artists should be hailed as heroes, you know, as being able to put themselves out there, being willing to take that risk of showing themselves and risking rejection. Because some people say, frankly, your stuff's shit. You know, they do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course they do.
Yeah, and that's fine. You just have to develop a really thick skin.
Yes.
So if you're thinking of leaving your job, your 9-to-5, then, you know, take a deep breath. As my Qigong teacher would say, you know, do it in incremental steps, you know. He's like, one day, you know, do one exercise. Next day, exercise whole day, you know, is incremental. Just fucking do it, mate. There's no time to lose. Yeah.
Yeah, and so now that you've left and you're doing this, do you feel that you're going to make a business out of your cartoons?
Mm, mm.
And then what about all the other interests that you have? So you do your Qigong teacher,
yeah.
And you have your books that you're writing,
yeah.
And you also have your comic strips. Do you think that you'll distill all of that into one thing that you'll focus on, or will you continue the many possible income streams with that?
Well, I think that eventually they will all coalesce under one umbrella.
Yeah.
They're all kind of got a similar flavor, you know. At the moment, I teach a Qigong class, and I'm starting to hold some retreats. But I feel like the Clarabelle stuff, my cartoon strip, is very much congruent with that. So, in fact, I share them with my students, and especially when my books come out. I think that the retreats that I will run will be around the content of those books, but it will also be using Qigong tools and other tools that I've learned. So I think eventually, you know, it will all come together. But right now, I'm just really playing with what works, what doesn't work.
Playing.
Playing.
I like that.
Every day is like playing.
I had to highlight that word.
Yeah.
It's very important.
But isn't it wonderful when you sit down at your Cintiq, you know, 23-inch, and you're like, woo-hoo! I know. Isn't it so exciting?
It's incredible.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy just doing this stuff, and I forget that I'm doing it for my work too.
Mm-hmm.
And I always hoped that I would have work that would feel like that, but for sure, I'm trying to build a following, a Facebook following. I've started a website, which is clarabelle.co, and there's a thing called Patreon. Have you come across Patreon?
I've heard of Patreon.
Are you on Patreon?
I'm not on there yet.
So Patreon, for people who don't know, is it's a thing set up by a guy in California. I think he's in California. And it's, you know, the old word patron, of people that would, you know, support you in your artistic endeavors. So you go on to the Patreon site, and you have your own page, and you there's artists there, you know, earning like really seriously good money.
I've heard that.
Yeah. And so it's an opportunity, not really supporting you as such, like a patron, but giving people the chance to participate more with you as, you know, not just an audience, but an interactive sort of community with you. So you have way more personal details to share with them, and, you know, they can have more direct contact with you, and they see exclusive material of yours, and they can make requests and all that kind of thing. And in return for that, they give you like between $1 and, you know, $10 usually a month. So that's a new thing, and is enabling quite a few artists, musicians, podcast makers, you know, to make some cash. So I've set up a page. I haven't launched it yet, but that's coming soon.
Mm. Oh, that's great. I'm sure many people in our audience would love to hear about that.
Yeah, Patreon. So it's Patreon. It's a great thing. And they seem like a really good bunch of people. So yeah, go check that out. So, I mean, talk to me again in like 6 months.
Yeah, well, I plan on it.
I plan on it. Let's see what happens.
You're the prototype radiant creator. Seriously, that I'm always looking for. That somebody that had the courage to walk away from their job, their income.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying to walk away from that. Here in this country, that means your health care. That's, you know, how am I going to pay my mortgage?
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing. But as we were talking last night, things just seem to fall into place.
They do.
It's really odd.
Yeah, it is really odd. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, since I've left work, people have contacted me who owe me money. You know, for example, I mean, how weird is that? Who would do that?
Yeah.
Putting money randomly into my account.
Yeah.
You know? And my husband, Jacob, has suddenly got all this work coming in. You know, we just, the more you, I see opportunity like a wind, you know, and it's blowing all the time and it's being sent, you know, by your higher self. And it's, but you can't feel the wind unless you put your hand up to meet it. So if you don't do that, you're never going to know. It was blowing around you the whole time. Mm-hmm. You never know who you might have bumped into had you made that trip to that city. You just don't know. You've got to get yourself out there. You've got to haul ass and get out there and believe in yourself. Because if you don't, then the wind can be blowing a gale. But you'll never know unless you put your hand out the window. Mm-hmm. You've just got to do it. So just try. You're going to die. You know, what could be more, you know, what could be more radical than that? If you think, like, death is the worst thing that can happen, it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, so...
You know, what the hell?
May as well just go for it.
Even if you die trying, right? Oh, well, never mind, you know? You're going to die anyway.